Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
What is the Bible? Who wrote the Bible?
The church will continue to be even more irrelevant when it quotes letters from 2,000 years ago.
Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so, is where our trouble began.
This sounds to me like the voice of someone who really has an appalling ignorance of what the Bible says about itself and what Jesus said about it.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And you didn't think your heart was an idol factory. Ah, this is Wretched Radio. Can you think of a sin that does not, at its root, at the core, at the foundation, we get it, Mr. Thesaurus, at its very basic level is idolatry? I can't think of one. Can you? Case in point, perhaps you feel like you have been gifted with the spiritual gift of putting the worst construction on everything. You know why somebody acted the way they did. You know why they didn't return your text. You know why you weren't chosen for the gig. Because you have that spiritual gift that, frankly, we all have. Might I suggest to you, at its root, that is idolatry. Let me show you how we chart that course so that rather than just giving yourself Oprah-like self-affirmations, I'm going to think the best about other people. I'm not going to be so critical. I won't be so negative and nasty. Like it's some sort of Hindu mantra that you just repeat. It's some sort of dialectic behavioral therapy. I'll just fake it till I make it. No. We get to the heart of the issue, which is the issue of our idolatrous hearts. Do you struggle with that? Is there anybody who doesn't struggle with that? Seriously, is there anybody who just, they're so positive, they are so chipper all the time, they never think the worst about anybody? I haven't met that person, and I certainly am not that person. Are you also, like I am, very quick to put the worst construction on things? To come up with the worst case scenario for why somebody behaved the way that they did? And it's fascinating to me that you and I have both been busted on this, probably multiple times, haven't we? Where you think that you're just going through the reasons why. It was pretty obvious you got slighted and you've come up with a laundry list. And then you bump into the fellow or the fellowette and they explain to you what went wrong and you go, oh, I had no idea. I was reading an article from The Cripplegate and the fellow was talking about his wife's management of their finances as he was going through a medical issue. He was sick. And he was a part of one of those. They're not called insurance. It's like Medishare, Samaritans. It's not Samaritan's Purse. I think it's It's not Samaria. That's a little region. Never mind that. It's Samaritans. That it's a health sharing program. You put money in every month, and then you take it out when you need it. If you've got a special need arise, people are asked to give extra. They give extra, and then your bills get paid. I think the concept is magnificent. Well, a fellow had promised to send in thousands of dollars so that this guy could pay his just huge medical bills. It doesn't show up. It doesn't show up. It doesn't show up. What's the reason? Oh, all kinds of nefarious reasons, thought the author of the Cripplegate article called Love and Believing the Best. And he came up with all kinds of problems. Then my wife received a letter. Along with the check was an apology from the individual. I am sorry that this is late. I have cancer and am going through rounds of chemotherapy right now, and because of that have been experiencing memory loss. Oh, man. Have you not been busted like that? I have, and yet I don't learn the lesson. It requires something more than just being shamed for being presumptuous in my understanding of why somebody did what they did. I need more than that. I need an understanding of what is going on in my heart. And I would suggest to you the issue is idolatry. Do you remember the story of Chuck Swindoll? He's a magnificent storyteller. He was on one of those ministry cruises, and he's speaking every night, doing a Bible study, whatever they call it, on the boat while they're, I think, pedaling around Alaska, which everybody says is the bomb. I haven't met anybody who has gone on an Alaskan cruise and came back going, yeah, it was all right. They just, oh, it was amazing. Chuck Swindoll is on this cruise, and a fellow in the front row, first night, falls asleep. Can't help but notice it, but he figures, you know, older fellow, jet lag, no big deal. Second night, guy falls asleep again. And he just very confessionally said, it kind of bugged him. It's like, okay, I get the first night, but really falling asleep the second time during my sermon? See, that's what's going on underneath, isn't it? How dare that guy be late with my payment? He shouldn't miss my Medishare payment. And Chuck Swindoll is thinking, how could he fall asleep during my sermon? Third night falls asleep, and now he's starting to simmer. During the day, he's thinking, if I run into this guy, oh, I'm going to give him a piece of my fourth night, the guy falls asleep again. That's one more night of this. Well, it happens every single night. And on the last night, as the woman and the man, the husband and the wife, are leaving for the last time, she comes back into the room to share with Pastor Swindoll her gratitude for his faithfulness to the word and for understanding that her husband was falling asleep each night because he's dying with a terminal illness and he just can't stay awake that long. Have you been busted like that? I have. It doesn't fix me. It doesn't teach me the lesson that I ought to learn because I'm not understanding what is going on with my heart. Let's dig into it courtesy of Cripplegate, shall we? Love believes all things, 1 Corinthians 13, 4 and 7, Rexella. It believes the best about one another. Now, that is helpful because it's a command. You violate it, you're sinning. That will curb some of your behavior, but not all of it. It is understanding why I do the wrong thing, why I don't believe all things, hope all things. Now, we need to note that doesn't mean that we're gullible, that somebody tells us a whopper, okay. We're not dumb. The naive believes everything, but the sensible person considers his steps. But in most cases, unless somebody is just playing us like a fiddle, we put the best construction on things. So how do we believe the best? It is defined this way: erring on the side of believing a favorable reality of another's actions and attitudes as opposed to suspicion or cynicism until clear evidence shows otherwise. So even if things are starting to, oh no, this isn't looking like this is panning out, like the person is telling the truth or actually did what they said that they did, I'm going to believe it until it's confirmed. We are to believe the best for two reasons. One, we're not God. We don't know everything about motives, circumstances, trials, hurts, complicating life situations. So if we weren't there to eyewitness it, we don't know what happened or what was said. So we assume the best. Second, we believe the best because we are to love our neighbor as ourselves. That's a bit of a challenge for me too, because I've got so much love for me, I barely have any left over for you because, wow, we do love ourselves. Failing to believe the best, writes Cripplegate, is often a worship problem, a form of, here it is, idolatry. I'm worshiping my wisdom, my opinions, my thinking, my understanding, my intuition, my supposed omniscience. I am worshiping me. And I'm holding an inflated view of my discernment, my intellect, my ability to figure things out, and to simply adjudicate every single thing that I see. I don't need to, and we do this on the internet, don't we? You've got yourself a faithful teacher, year after year after year. And then you read one comment, and it's like, huh. False teacher! I knew it! The guy never shined his shoes! The guy never took the time to put polish. By the way, Chuck Swindoll polishes his shoes.
Who does a lot. That anymore?
They're old shoes, but he polishes them. I think he's a military man. Maybe whatever it was. taught to polish his shoes. But that teacher who doesn't, you knew. Really? Well, I believe that I actually have that gift. What's at the heart of it? I know best. What is that? Idolatry. That's what that is, pure and simple. We've made an idol of our own thinking abilities. Now, it is a spiral, isn't it? This happens constantly. I'm sure they didn't contact me because. I'll bet they didn't like my Facebook post because. I didn't get chosen for that ministry position because, well, maybe it's because you're not as good as you think you are. Maybe it's because the Facebook post wasn't good. Maybe it's because they had other more important pressing issues than contacting you. Do you hear what's at the root of all of that? Me syndrome. I'm absolutely, positively the most important thing on the planet, doing everything right. The heart of the matter is the matter of the heart. And when I go about the business of judging everyone negatively, what I am revealing is not my omniscience, but my foolishness, my lack of love, and my idolatrous heart, which is at the root of the problem. Does that solve my judgmental attitude? As they say in Germany, au contraire. We'll figure out how to do that next on Wretched Radio. If you have been looking for a reason to sponsor your very own Tomorrow Club in Eastern Europe, perhaps this story from Max, the national director in Ukraine, will inspire you to visit tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Arsen, just 5 years old, escaped his home and came to the camp. His grandmother would not let him. She was cursing all Christians. His grandmother sadly passes away. So he kept coming. Not only that, he brought his parents and they repented. So this family gives the house where the grandmother used to live to the church. And that's where the Tomorrow Club meets.
And that story is not a one-off. Families getting saved constantly through the Tomorrow Clubs in Eastern Europe. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club? 30 disciples, $30 per month. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Last year's Bastille Day sale elicited the following emails. This is so inappropriate. You are taking this too far. I am unsubscribing. In response to these emails, complaints, this year we're proud to announce Wretched's second annual Bastille Day sale. Come celebrate the French Revolution with us July 12th through the 14th. I mean, people are really losing their heads over these prices. In fact, these markdowns are starting riots. We're practically putting the steel in Bastille. Get it? You don't want to miss out on this sale. Okay, I think I'm done now. Nope, wait, one more. 'Twas the best of sales, 'twas the worst of sales. Okay, now I think I'm done. Visit wretched.org/sale July 12th through the 14th for Wretched's second annual Bastille Day sale. That's wretched.org/sale July 12th through the 14th.
Ultrasound machines save lives. Don't believe me? Then believe Dan Steiner of preborn.org.
A young woman come in, 18, with her boyfriend, and he's pushing her to abort, took him back into the ultrasound room. There's two hearts there. It's twins. The father looks at that, this 19-year-old guy. He goes, I don't know what we're going to do, but I know what we're not going to do. We're not going to kill those two babies.
Ultrasounds work. When a mommy, a daddy sees a picture of their baby in the womb, 80% of the time they choose life. It is $28 per ultrasound. May I ask, how many ultrasounds could you provide? $28 per month. Please note, whilst Preborn is busy trying to save the lives of babies, they're trying to save the souls of mommies and daddies by preaching the gospel. Please consider supporting Preborn at preborn.org/wretched. preborn.org/wretched.
Books of the Bible. The book of Numbers tells the story of Israel's wandering in the desert for 40 years. The journey from Egypt to Canaan should have only taken 11 days, but Israel's grumbling and disobedience angered God, and none of the Israelites were allowed to enter the promised land. But God remained faithful and led their children into their inheritance.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
It's Wretched Radio. But if you could just hold on just for a second, Tony.
Yeah.
Do you have all of the spots and promotional announcements done for August and September yet?
No.
So lazy.
Don't even have.
And that Emily, who's supposed to get you all of the announcements, she's probably slacking, you know, doing what those kids do on the internet these days, just playing on the internet with social media. Back to Wretched Radio. Sound familiar? Of course it does, silly rabbit, because we all have the bent to not put the best construction, frankly, on anything. And if we don't figure out what the root of that is, why? What's the cause? You can't root it out. And the root of our sin, I can't think of one that isn't, is idolatry. Think of adultery. You go, well, that's just a sexual sin. It is. But it's not just that. It is the sin of a man or woman who promised, who vowed to be faithful till death do him or her. Can I still use those pronouns? Before death do Zed part or something. And yet they decide their need is greater than their vow to God. I need to have this affair. Now, it can be masked in all kinds of desire, but nevertheless, that is what is at the root of it. And I can't think of a sin that does not have idolatry at its very core, including a judgmental attitude. Got one? I know that I do. So let's see if we can figure out why we've got it, which we have, idolatry, and what we can do about it. From Cripplegate, an article, Love and Believing the Best, a little refresher. Here's the scenario. You're at church. You leave, and you're fuming. Why? Because it's been 3 weeks since anyone has initiated a conversation with you at church. Sound familiar? It happens. So you start thinking, what's going on here? What's the matter with this church? What's the problem? Maybe it's the way the pastor is preaching. These people are just cold. They think they're the frozen chosen. They're all from Minnesota. They're just terrible with interaction and being kind. This is not a good church. Sound familiar? No one cares about me. Is it the way that I'm dressing? That must be it. Well, here's some reasons that maybe nobody taught you for 3 whole weeks. Maybe all the moms and dads are just trying to keep their kids from being naughty. Again, maybe the church members all had a difficult week. Maybe they're in a trial. Maybe there's stuff going on you're just not aware of. Maybe everyone's running around serving and ministering, reaching out to their visitors. Maybe they're just sinners like you. Maybe God sovereignly had no one talk to you so that you would see and confess your self-focused attitude. Remember, anytime you get a squeeze, what comes out is what's in there. God uses it to bring it out in you. Was reading a little tract. It was from Paul Tripp on parenting. Can't remember the title of it. It was really a tract. We had him in our church lobby. And how parenting will do that. It just, the irritations, what comes out of you. The frustrations, what comes out of you. The stinky diaper, again. Why hasn't my husband been changing these? This is my third one in a row. What's the matter with him? Well, the question isn't what's the matter with him or my kids. The question is what's the matter with me and why am I reacting this way? And the answer to each of those questions is idolatry. I shouldn't have to change 3 diapers in a row. I should have a peaceful home. Why? Because it's King Me we're talking about here. I shouldn't have interruptions. I shouldn't have naughty children. Do you hear the idolatry, the idolatry, the idolatry? And maybe God doesn't have anybody in church talk to you by his sovereign design so that you can see some sort of bitterness come out of you, which ultimately has its root in idolatry. We're not commanded to joyfully plug into a church because of how much people like us, but because Christ died for us. Maybe you've been struggling with this issue at church. Maybe you're thinking about not joining a church because nobody treats you the way you think you should be treated. Maybe, I can't diagnose from afar, but maybe the issue isn't the church, but it's you, and God is revealing to you that you're worshiping you too much, and you think that when you attend church, it is for your benefit and for your good, and not for service of others, and not for the worship of the king. It's interesting to me. I've seen this in my own heart. Perhaps you've seen it too. Nobody talked to me this week. Just got a question for you. Did you talk to anybody? No. What do you mean, did I talk to anybody? Well, maybe they're feeling the same way about you. Idolatry. We have a heart issue, and it is idolatry. Sometimes, writes Cripplegate, we believe the worst by avoiding coming alongside someone to show them their sin by assuming that they will not be receptive. Oh, man. This is just a little too probing for me. Because I have to confess to you, I have a list of people that I've been wanting to confront with their sin, but thought, well, what's the point in doing this? In fact, the list, well, I'll just be honest with you. You're on the list because everybody I meet, I think, needs some form of correction. But the point of this is I cannot put the best construction on issues even like this. I'm not going to bother to. They're never grateful. They never respond. They're never going to change anyway. They're not going to receive it. They've just got a bad attitude. Putting the worst construction. How do you know until you try? When it comes to others, prepare yourself for this. We are proficient prosecutors, even and especially when we do not have all of the data. True, isn't it? Conversely, when it comes to ourselves, we're pervasive permitters, believing the best about ourselves, even when it's unwarranted. Isn't that the bent of our idolatrous hearts? That's just... I know that you did it for wrong motives, but everything I do is right and justifiable and correct. And it is everything. This is so deep in us. Where do you want to go? We're having a bit of a family texting discussion because that's the way families communicate these days. By the way, I googled images of families on their cell phones because it's my pet peeve because nobody has the right to be on a cell phone. None of their anything that they do is not nearly as important when I'm at a meal and I actually use my cell phone. And I saw all these families, and in the image feed, it was a restaurant that will pay for the kids' meal if mom and dad will stow the phones away. It's a big issue. So when I see other people on their phones with their kids, I'm like, what's the matter with those parents? And maybe that's accurate, but when it comes to me using my phone, which I'll do over the most ridiculous things. All right, Tony, you and I are having dinner.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about
something.
You're talking about dermatology. Okay, dermatology.
Ooh, fascinating.
Sure. Well, we tend to have those sorts of erudite conversations. Not that I know what erudite actually means.
The deep conversations.
Dermatology. I wonder what that word means. Boom! Out comes the cell phone. Oh, from the Latin word dermis, which means skin, and ology, which is the study of skin. Ah, okay. Now, I can do that because it's me, but I see you on your cell phone, and you have no excuse for that. Isn't that true? What is it? It's idolatry. That's what it is. I love me. You not so much. Cripplegate, if you struggle to believe the best, the solution goes deeper than telling yourself positive things about people. At the root of not believing the best is an inflated view of self. That's idolatry. It's self-worship that looks down from its throne on others. It is a self-worship problem. That's idolatry. The answer is not positive affirmations. The answer is not to be scolded by me or anybody else for that matter. The answer is perpetually, constantly, always the cross, always. Because it kicks me off of the throne of my own little world. It causes me to be humbled, recognizing I am a sinful disaster. How dare I put the worst construction on things from a fellow sinner? How dare I do that? Let me share just one of many biblical examples of the necessity of remembering, pondering, meditating on what Jesus did on the cross to conform us into his image. It's replete throughout the New Testament. This is just one admonition. Philippians 2, verse 3. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others as better than himself. Look out not just for your own interests, but for the interests of others. How do you do that? Verse 5, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ, who being in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but make himself no reputation, taking the form of a servant, likeness of men, humbled himself to the point of death, death on the cross. The only way that I can be humble enough to put the best construction on everything is to be more like Jesus by looking at Jesus. The only way to esteem others as better than self is to look at Jesus. The only way I can be conformed to his image is by staring at his image. This is Wretched Radio.
Books of the Bible. The book of Numbers tells the story of Israel's wandering in the desert for 40 years. The journey from Egypt to Canaan should have only taken 11 days, but Israel's grumbling and disobedience angered God, and none of the Israelites were allowed to enter the promised land. But God remained faithful and led their children into their inheritance. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Is that the cat that ate your new shoes? This is... Yeah. Wretched Radio, if you've ever been wondering, and I doubt you have, what goes on here during the breaks? Oh, the scintillating theological conversations. Ho, I'm telling you lies. That, well, we just talk profound things like, how does that song about the Chattanooga choo-choo go? That's what I needed to know.
Pardon me, Roy, is that the cat that chewed your new shoes?
That's the joke.
Or is it,
pardon me, boy, is that the Chattanooga choo-choo? See, I was
track 29.
Okay, stop.
Something.
I would, in my head, I'm singing, gonna take a Chattanooga choo-choo.
That's a sentimental journey, Todd.
But you can you not have a sentimental journey?
Oh, that is one of my favorite Duke Ellington songs.
On the Chattanooga choo-choo, you could, I suspect.
So I am not wrong again.
Ever,
this
because you are the
Wretched
host.
Radio. We were in Chattanooga over the weekend. I got to tell you, Chattanooga.
Do they have a choo-choo?
That is a happening little town. It's bigger than I thought. It's about 180,000, give or take. Something like that, I think. About 100,000 short of St. Paul. Had to compare the two. You know, hometown, Chattanooga.
You're like that.
We were there a number of years ago driving from Nashville to Atlanta. And it was like, well, this is a nice little town. It's gotten really super cool. It's one. I don't know how this works, but it seems to happen a lot in urban developments. Kind of the warehousey district, which is all run down, dilapidated, because who does industry anymore? We just make computers to do all of that type of work, and it gets all busted up, and the windows are boarded, and yet somebody comes in and goes, "We're going to make this cool." Now that means there's about 1,000 coffee shops in that district, but that's what they've done in Chattanooga on the south side. It is really super groovy. And the northern side, wow, that's like really neat looking over the river. It's a lovely little town. And the aquarium, it rocks. It's got a good museum. Hello, my name is Todd. I'm the new spokesperson for the Chattanooga Tourism Board, apparently. Todd, why did you bring that up? And the answer is, I wanted to use my mouth to edify. That's right. That was a segue into an article from Scott Hubbard, How We Use Our Mouths. So often, we use our mouths not to build up, but to tear down. Now, I wanted to use Chattanooga as a demonstration of how to build up. You see, because I could have talked about those two blocks between the south side and the north side that are still pretty grungy and they need to do a little bit of work, but I didn't do that. See, instead I just focused on the positive. For instance, when we went to the 4th of July celebration, because apparently there are still some people who think the country is a big blessing, I could have complained about the way that they had it set up so that you were staring into the sun and they could have put the stage on the other side just as easily and shot off the fireworks so the rest of us didn't get blinded in the sun. I could have done that, but instead, I'll just tell you how much I appreciated the orchestra. Chattanooga has a good orchestra. I was really surprised. I don't know. It's not. I don't know if you knew this, but it's not a top 10 populated city in the country, the Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I didn't have high expectations for the orchestra. They were really, really good. But can somebody tell me what Yankee Doodle Dandy has to do with the 4th of July other than just having the words inside of it? It sounds to me, I didn't look up the lyrics, but as best I could tell when they were singing it, it's about a guy who's kind of a cad. Am I wrong about that?
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy, a Yankee Doodle, Yankee Doodle do or die. A real-life nephew of my Uncle Sam, born on the 4th of July.
I got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart. She's my Yankee Doodle joy. Yankee Doodle came to town just to ride the ponies. I am that Yankee Doodle boy. That has something to do with independence. Regardless, I could have criticized that, but I'm not going to.
You really should have.
From Scott Hubbard, why God made your mouth. Yeah, it's to consume air. Mm-hmm. It's to take in sustenance, food, water, all of those things. But it is also to be like God, who is a communicating God. But the question is, how do you and I communicate? I would like to suggest to you again, when I do not use my mouth rightly, it is because of idolatry. I should be talking like God. But when I don't, when I use my mouth for coarse things, for low things, not to build up, which is the command that is given to us in Ephesians chapter 4, no corrupting talk should come out of your yammer. I'm paraphrasing, but only such as is good for building up as fits the occasion. That's an important parenthetical remark, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. You and I are saved by grace. God speaks gracious words into our life. Now, that doesn't mean that our words can never be hard. Jesus always spoke gracefully, but that doesn't mean he wouldn't sometimes call somebody a whitewashed tomb. But the attitude behind it was for the sake of building up. And there are times when our words need to be hard to ultimately conform somebody into the image of Jesus. But even those should be grace-filled words because our desire is not to tear down but to build up. And there is a massive difference, is there not? How I use my mouth determines if I'm being an idolater or if I am being godly. If I am tearing down, if I'm just being nasty, if I'm being cynical and critical and just a nyeh, that's a Latin word. You can look up the etymology of that one. It means to be somebody that people probably don't like to be around a lot. I'm being an idolater because I think my way of thinking is better than God's way of thinking, which is always grace-filled. He speaks grace into our lives, and that's what we should be doing with one another. How are you doing in that regard? This commandment in Ephesians 4 to build up, giving grace to those who hear, this should happen not just when you're preaching, not when you're teaching a Sunday school lesson, dinner table, classroom, smartphone, internet, office. Every time we open our mouths, it should give grace. Note again, there are times when our words need to be hard, but that doesn't mean that they are not giving grace at the same time. Given all that Paul says about grace in Ephesians, because Ephesians is loaded with grace, he could scarcely have handed our mouths a higher calling. Perhaps that'll help you speak higher and better. Your mouth will either represent God or the devil or yourself. That's a high task. I can either build up or tear down. I have a chance to help or to hurt. Take the grace you have received from God and let it change the accent of your soul. Then take your words, flavored with grace, and use them to carry on Jesus' redeeming work in someone else's life. I think I've told you about this book a couple of times. We'll get to it someday. Instruments in the Redeemer's Hands. People in Need of Change, Helping People in Need of Change. Did you catch the subtitle? People in Need of Change, Helping People in Need of Change. You and I can be instruments in the Redeemer's hands with everybody with whom we come into contact. Everybody. You can build up, you can tear down. You can be a source of help conforming somebody into the image of Jesus Christ, or you can just rip them to shreds. What an honor that I, a busted pot, get to help other broken up clay become conformed into the image of Jesus Christ. That should motivate us to get on it and use our words better. Whenever God makes someone an object of grace, he also makes them an agent of grace. This cannot be stressed enough. No matter how much you might be hurting right now, and you can go through a season of just being ministered to, ultimately we all minister one to another, and we can't use our sinfulness to disqualify ourselves. Of course you're a sinner. That does not keep you from edifying. That does not keep you from serving. It doesn't keep you from building up the body. We are all called to do that. Practically, giving grace means speaking words that are good for building up. Gracious words can straighten bend over saints. They are hurting. You can lift the load. They can strengthen tottering legs, bind up bruised arms, grow each other, quote, into the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. Giving grace is a call to imitate God. When I don't give grace, when I don't speak edifying words, I'm being an idolater again. And it's not confined to just church talk. It's when you're talking to your kids. It's when you're talking to your spouse. It's when you're at the campfire with your friends. It's when you're in the grocery store. You're in the checkout line. When you're sending another email. You can build up. Now, please note, pass the salt. Doesn't need to be. You know, son, I noticed you're looking more muscular. I'm sure it won't be difficult for you to pick up that salt and pass it to your old man. Don't need to do that with everything, but you could with a lot of things, couldn't you? What keeps you from speaking grace-filled words? It's idolatry. I think my words of criticism are better. I think my words of sharpness are more important. I think my critical nature will get somebody to conform more into the image that I want them to be in. Gracious words are not capricious, and it's not striking a balance. Okay, I told them they're a whitewashed tomb, but that's a really pretty dress. No, everything that comes out of our mouth should have one goal, and that goal is to edify and give grace. That's the measuring stick. So if what comes flying out of your yammer doesn't meet that measurement, you're being an idolater. This is Wretched Radio.
Thank you for being here today. Glad you would spend part of it listening to Wretched Radio. As part of our millennial initiative, we have a prison initiative. The reason? 30% of those behind bars are millennials. And the recidivism rates? Ew. Within 3 years of release, about two-thirds of the prisoners are rearrested. Within 5 years of release, that number jumps to over 76% back in jail. Those recidivism numbers are just too high. We think the gospel would help. Wretched wants to provide prison ministries with our free resources like Don't Stub Your Toe, What Time Is Purple, Are You a Rotten Fish? You know, our gospel booklets. And there are two ways you can help. First, if you want to help get these resources behind bars, visit wretched.org/prison, because the more you're able to give, the more we're able to give away. Secondly, if you're a prison ministry and would like to get these free resources, contact Jen at wretched.org. That's J-E-N, Jen at wretched.org. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Please, would you please consider sending as many Bibles as you can through Bible League International to the persecuted church?
Aria was raised in a strict Muslim family. A woman invited her to a Bible study. She accepted Jesus as Lord and Savior. She took her Arabic New Testament home. She hid it. Her mother was rummaging through the house, found this, gave it to her father. He called the authorities to report her as an infidel. They tortured her, did the same thing to the Christian friend. These two women have been instrumental through their suffering to lead about 50 people to Christ.
And they would love a Bible. Would you please consider sending as many as you are able to through Bible League International, $5 for a Bible to a persecuted Christian. Perhaps 6 per month? Wretched.org/Bible, wretched.org/Bible.
So, what do you call a fish with no eyes?
I don't know. What?
A fsh. Get it? A fsh. Because there are no eyes?
Oh.
Our newest evangelistic booklet is titled, Are You a Rotten Fish? While there aren't any amazing jokes like that in it, it does provide a thorough presentation on true and false conversions. Jesus preached on the subject of true and false conversions with the parables about wheat and tares, wise and foolish virgins, good fish and rotten fish. Are You a Rotten Fish compares and contrasts the true gospel versus false gospels, the correct gospel response of repentance and faith versus incorrect responses like asking Jesus into your heart. All you have to do is hop on your computer or your phone and visit wretched.org/fish and order your copies. That's fish with an I. So who do you know who might be a rotten fish? Order your copies at wretched.org/fish today. wretched.org/fish.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who He is and what He has done. Jesus is called a fragrant offering. In the Old Testament, God required burnt offerings of meat and incense as a pleasing aroma. These sacrifices foreshadowed Jesus, the perfect offering that takes away the sins of the world. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
I left my harp in Sam Frank's disco. Nobody ever thought that joke was funny, ever. This is Wretched Radio, once again demonstrating the scintillating chat that happens during commercials on Wretched Radio. How we use our mouths is a signal as to whether or not we are being idolaters or being godly. Scott Hubbard, Why God Made Your Mouth. To build up, to edify, to give grace, to help people become more like Jesus Christ. And when I am not talking like God, I am demonstrating my ways are better than your ways. What is that? It is nothing more than idolatry. Again, a reminder that our words can sometimes be harder. Our words can be uncomfortable, not always cozy, not always Oprah-like. Okay, I'm not sure our words should ever be Oprah-like, but she is nice, isn't she? Shouldn't we at least come across as nice as Oprah? Nice words aim to make somebody feel good. Gracious words, speaking grace, have a higher ambition to make somebody, assist somebody in actually being Christ-like. Once again, a reminder, God's ideals and God's understanding of the world and what's important, so radically different from ours, isn't it? I just want to speak the word. I want to speak the words that get the food to my table fast, and you better have the check before I put the last bite into my mouth because I want to get out of here. Let's make it snappy. I want my kids to behave. Let's just make sure that we clean up that room. We got to go. We got things to do today. All right. I'm not suggesting that everything that you say to everybody needs to have some sort of positive affirmation. In fact, sometimes they shouldn't have a positive affirmation, but they should, at their root, be striving to help the person that is hearing your words become more Christ-like. The same apostle who told us to give grace didn't refrain from scolding. Consider the book of Galatians. Jesus, His words were ever full of grace and truth, John 1:14. And yet, He sometimes pruned vines with a slice. Gracious words should have that end game. It doesn't mean namby-pamby, oh, you know, you're just so wonderful. Tony, when you do the news, you're just so amazing. And if you could do more stories on this particular subject, well, that would just make them even more incredible. Okay, we're not talking about sounding like a Hallmark card. Nobody should sound like that.
Not even Hallmark cards.
But if my desire is to build up, it's just going to change my tone. It's going to change my content. Perhaps this will be helpful, just some practical application for you. Simple first step. What does this person need? I need to. And different people need different words, don't they? Some people, they need a board upside the head, metaphorically speaking. There are some people who will only be corrected by a rod to the back. And that tells me different types of words, different types of tones can be used for different people. So what does this person need to be conformed more to the image of Jesus Christ? Somebody does something annoying, and it happens to be that trait that you've seen exhibited many times before. Here's my inclination. What is it going to take for you to knock that off? come on. How many times have we been through this? Now, does that help? Really? Now, is it possible that I could at some point say, you know, we've talked about this so many times, I'm curious. How come it seems that you're still struggling with this? Now, that's radically different because I want to understand that what's going on? Why is this such a high hurdle for them to jump over as opposed to just knock it off already? I've been nice about this long enough. I need to assess the person. Where are they at? What's going on? Have an understanding so that my words can fit the occasion. And so asking questions, paying attention before I let words fly can be so helpful, can't they? Let no corrupting word come out of my mouth. Lord, help me with that. Then, after you've understood the person, maybe ask perceptive questions. When the time comes, open your mouth and give grace. And what an honor to do so. When we fail to give words of grace, we are failing to act like God. Therefore, we are idolaters. Simple as that. Can you imagine the tone of Jesus preaching, what that must have sounded like? Let's just say you were invited to play the role of Jesus. Now, I know that that is typically for Jim Caviezel or for Bruce Marciano. I think that's his name, isn't it?
Clever.
Right?
Matthew Visual Bible.
Yeah. He's Jesus and everything. I still like the Matthew Visual Bible presentation, word for word Matthew. I thought it was excellent.
There but are now four it's word like, for word gospels on Netflix, and it's not either of them.
Okay, but he's pushing 60, and now yes. He's doing movies where like Jesus comes back to a diner to help the waitress, and who is it? It's Bruce Marcia.
He's supper at 4 o'clock.
Kind of comes up with new ways of being Jesus and different things. I'm supposed to sound like Jesus when he preached. How would you sound? How do you think he sounded? Do you think that anybody ever left his hearing and went, wow, he hates me? Not a chance. Even the Pharisees, they couldn't do that. They knew that he was motivated by something greater. He didn't just want to slice and dice one of my spiritual gifts. He wanted to build up and edify. Imagine what he sounded like. That's what you and I should sound like. Even when we have to speak a harder word, it should be for the sake of edification and building up. Here's another opportunity to be an idolater, because it is my estimation and opinion that every single sin has its root in idolatry. How's about the sin of impatience? Michael Kelly, 3 reasons why patience matters for the Christian. Prepare to have your heart probed again, only to discover a little statue of you right in the middle of it. Patience, writes Mr. Kelly, is an act of humility. When we become impatient, we betray our inner assumption that we had the best thing planned. That's idolatry. That's what that is. When our plan for our day, our lives, whatever it is, are interrupted and we have to go a different way, our level of patience will demonstrate how convinced we are in our own ability to make plans and determine this is the best thing. Now, let's imagine you're driving to work and you take that route because you figured out what you think is the quickest way. And that morning, you've got an important meeting and that was the plan. And somebody was in an accident and it's backed up. You're locked in. You cannot make a move to get out of it. And you know you're going to be late for your meeting. How do you respond? Your impatience is being revealed by God through that hang-up to demonstrate how you think about yourself and your plans. Now, does that mean that you can't go, well, this certainly changes things. I'm going to have to deal with this. This could cause some problems. I need to think that. Of course you can. This is not about just somehow becoming just a mindless. I'm letting go and letting God. But how you engage in the correction, that's the issue. No, I had to be at this meeting, which is another demonstration. If you're not at that meeting, the whole world is going to fall apart. What is that at its core? It's idolatry again. It is a constant battle for the believer, and there is a solution for it, which we will get to in a moment. When our plans are disrupted and we patiently adapt and act accordingly, we show that we humbly recognized how short-sighted we are in vision and wisdom and frankly, ability to make the world operate in alignment with my plans. We think that we are going to, I've got this so totally under my control that I'm going to get to the meeting at this time, have things set up, the PowerPoint is all ready to go, and I'm going to do the razzle-dazzle, and things are going to work out, and then things are going to move forward. Without me, they can't. Wow, that's idolatry. Patience, writes Michael Kelly, is an act of service. I have a choice, whether I patiently help or whether I impatiently respond. Every time I choose patience, I'm choosing to put my own desires on the back burner and embrace the inconvenience of service. Jesus was running a universe. It was time. The time had come. The time was fulfilled, which means all of human history and time was pointing toward the moment Jesus hit the planet and began his ministry. This is the culmination of time. He's running the universe. And yet, he interrupted that to become a human being, take on human form to save sinners in an act of service. That's our key. That's our key. When we are being persecuted and we're supposed to respond in a gracious way, how do we do that? We look at Jesus, who was persecuted more than anybody else on the planet, who was treated to more injustice than any of us ever will be, whose plans were interrupted, if you will, more than any of ours, his important business, so that he could serve, so that he could seek and save the lost, so that he could buy himself a people to be conformed to his image for God's glory. That is the key to not being an idolater. Stop looking at self, start staring at Jesus more with unveiled face, and you will be conformed more and more to his image, and you will stop having the idol of self rule your life, and he will. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.